Hey everybody, Mike Bloom here, getting you ready for our first Survivor South Africa deep dive with the runner-up, the former Miss South Africa herself, Nicole Capper. I'm very excited for you guys to listen to this. I thought it was a great start to our Survivor South Africa deep dives. Obviously, Nicole was a major part of the season, and she gave a lot of her thoughts on all the chaos from Saul in the beginning, big things like the Nathan vote, the Mother Jacques incident, and of course, the finish where she ends up getting 4 votes to Rob's 6. And she offers a lot of context and perspective along the way. I will warn you, if you're looking at the runtime, this deep dive is going to be a bit on the shorter side. Nicole is somebody with a very busy schedule, and I'm very grateful that she was able to fit us in for a brief deep dive. Now, you also may hear some extraneous noise on Nicole's end, but I tried to mitigate it as much as possible, so hopefully it isn't too big of a distraction. I do apologize in advance if there were certain questions that you wanted asked or followed up on. I wanted to make sure that I got through all of Nicole's game over the course of the limited time we had together. Suffice it to say, it was a lot to get through, but I think we were able to hit all the major points. If you want to follow up and ask her anything, she is very readily available on social media, as she'll talk about at the end of the podcast, _ Nicole Capper on Instagram and Twitter. Be sure to let her know your feelings on this deep dive. Just wanted to give some brief disclaimers before we get into it. I'll be back at the end of this, wrapping things up after our conversation. But for now, here's my deep dive with Nicole. All right, everybody, I'm so excited to bring you the very first of our Survivor South Africa Island of Secrets deep dives. And it's fitting that we start off with this person, considering she came out with the season on a big note in many, many ways. And she lasted all the way to the final episode, where she had a big conclusion as well. She is your first runner up for Survivor South Africa Island of Secrets. Please welcome to the podcast, Nicole Capper. Nicole, welcome.
Hello, Mike. Thanks for having me.
So now, I don't want to go into too much, pageantry parlance, but I guess if Rob is unable to fulfill his duties as Survivor winner, do you take over as first runner-up?
Listen, hey, I could be good at spending money. I don't know.
Well, before we get into your game, because there's certainly a lot to talk about, we're talking, you know, almost a week since the finale in which, you know, Rob was officially crowned the winner, the reunion happened, etc. That finale aired. What's your life been like? Have you been able to get back into some sort of semblance of normalcy, whatever that might be for someone like you?
Yes, it's been amazing. Finally being able to talk about everything is really cool. And also being normal with one another, hanging out together as castaways, you know, that's pretty cool.
I know that obviously there was a lot of contentious feelings during the season, which we'll certainly get into. Has that sort of washed over at this point? Is it sort of like let's leave it all on Samoa and now we can fully embrace each other?
Listen, with the intensity of the emotion on the jury in those final weeks, I didn't anticipate there to be a resolution on the level that it is now, if I can put it that way. Mm. And I've been pleasantly surprised. I think on the most part, everybody's really cool. I can see, and there's definitely some people that still need to work through things, but a lot of that is personal stuff they also need to work out. But in general, yeah, it's really been cool hanging out with everybody outside of Samoa.
Well, let's start before you actually get to Samoa, because I happened to find your audition video where you gave your audition pitch hiking up a mountain while it was hailing. Bananas. But what, you know, brought you to audition for Survivor? Was it a show that you had watched a lot of before coming into the situation?
So no, I was not a Survivor professional. I'm a fan of the process. I'm a fan of the show. I watched, I think, the last full season of South African Survivor I watched was season 2, just because it's been a busy life and it wasn't my obsession. And in hindsight, maybe I should have watched a bit more Survivor. But I genuinely went in, I think, with this teenage adventure camp, wide-eyed wonder at the whole process. I definitely went for, the same reasons that I did Miss South Africa. I think I was never a pageant queen. I was never I'd never done modeling or anything like that, but I wanted to do something completely outside of my comfort zone that challenged me. And I know some people will roll their eyes. That's fine. I'm used to it now. Roll away. and cute. I want to do it to be an example to my kids, for sure.
Yeah, and well, before we get into that, just briefly about, you know, Miss South Africa, because, I mean, that was such a big part of your life to the point where it was your lower third throughout the entirety of the season. So, you know, I personally don't know too much about the competition that you were a part of, but what that was another type of thing of, like, I've never done this before. Let me try to go out for this process, no matter how, you know, complicated and arduous it may be.
Yes, exactly. And I learned a lot in the process. A lot of things that I was bad at that I got better at. And I learned my capacity, I think, and that's what Survivor did as well. You realize you can do a lot more than you ever thought you could, essentially. And that's why before, I think entering Survivor would have been a no, I can't do that. Never. That's too intense. But then you've done something you never thought you could do before. Suddenly you think, well, hey, maybe, why not? And then Mother Nature gifts you with the entry video of the century. I mean, who gets two hailstorms on a mountain climb the week before due dates for videos?
Yeah. So let's get into, speaking of the pageantry, let's get into that first episode, because I think any idea you had of possibly hiding your identity was firmly eliminated when it turns out that not only is there a contestant on your season who was part of the pageantry world, knows who you are, but is on the same tribe as you. Now, obviously, we heard a lot in that first episode of Leanne's side of the story of how she knew you and your relationship. Was it reciprocal? Did you know of who she was, and did you have certain feelings towards her when the game began?
That's a rough one, hey? Because the moment I saw her, I realized I knew her. But it wasn't a, hey, I know you, to the point that I'm going to be in your alliance. Mm-hmm. And yes, I knew from the minute I saw her that it would probably be a brutal one.
So, I mean, we have later on her sort of professing her loyalty to you. I mean, was it just a point of you sort of saying, you know, it wasn't more so about, you know, the past that you two had. It was just about, hey, we made this alliance and she was on the outside, even if she is trying to appeal to you based on the history you have together.
Exactly. Yes. And I'm there to play a game. And yeah. Yeah, it's a complicated one.
I can imagine. Well, I guess in addition to that, you know, we do have the formation of the Amigos. Now, from what we saw, it was, you know, you, Steffi, Rob, and Nathan just sort of in the jungle with, you know, C-Pay and Leanne hanging out and Paul on Island of Secrets just saying, all right, let's lock this in. Was there anything we didn't see about, you know, what caused you four in particular to bond so quickly, so strongly?
I think that's a really good question. So it's actually, I've wanted to say this forever and I've never really had the opportunity. It's never come up, but I owe a lot of my game plan and gameplay to that moment that Steffi cornered us in the forest. Everybody was tiptoeing around one another and she had the guts to step out and say, come guys, let's do this. And we were all like wide-eyed and even afterwards said one another, sure, you know, that's coming out quite strong early in the game. You're putting a target on your back. But she essentially formed the Amigos, and I'll be eternally grateful for that. There were other moments, though, and I think we'll get to it later probably. But the connection between Rob and I was separate but connected to the Amigos. And that was just a fundamental trust that started from day one.
Who was the first person that you really bonded with out there on the island?
It's between, I have to say, Nathan.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, Nathan was the first person. Mm-hmm. Nathan and Rob.
So then, you know, as part of the Amigos, Paul comes back and says, hey, let's all dig up this idol, which you're able to, and you're able to give it over to him. And that certainly causes some issues that we'll definitely get into. I mean, what were your thoughts about this idea? I know that you said you hadn't watched, you know, Survivor South Africa in a long time, especially when idols have become like such a big thing in modern Survivor. But was there anything going through your head as you all, as a group, dug up this idol, which I have to say is very, very rarely seen in Survivor, with this being the exception?
Well, no, correction. And I think this was never shown. Like, I need one moment for the fact that I found that idol all by myself. Mm. I figured it out and I worked it out. It was just so eager to dig it out that I didn't realize everybody was around me when I was doing it. And then had to play the share the idol card. But yes, in hindsight, very, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, so if nobody was around and you found the idol, would you have just pocketed for yourself and said, I can't find it, we're going to have to keep digging?
Probably. I probably think I would have. And then used it as currency later in a certain scenario to gain somebody's trust. But yeah, at the time, it actually worked in our favor because there I looked very unthreatening and assuming. Oh, it's an idol. Let's share it. It's so amazing. And then let them do with it what they will. Let them stand up and decide you're wearing it today and you can carry it in your bag. And yeah, deep down, I knew that I was also gaining their trust by sharing it with them and not pretending like I didn't care. Pretending.
Yeah, I absolutely see that. So when we get to Tribal Council, you had expressed, you know, at Tribal Council, like, I feel really undecided right now. We're obviously going to get to another Tribal Council, which was very much decided in the moment. But, you know, was this another great acting performance from Nicole Capper? How unsure were you really as to whether or not you would vote off C-Pay or Leanne in that moment?
I decided I was voting for C-Pay walking in.
Oh.
And then in the last few minutes, I was decided that I was voting off Leanne. It was that much of a change for me. I was, it was a shocker, literally a shocker. A good one, though.
I know you had spoken up, you know, C-Pay's speaking abilities. Was it just that she was able to provide more of a winning argument to convince you in that moment?
Yes. So what you saw on TV, in her presence, that woman is an orator. She actually commands a room. And literally within a few minutes, we were all looking at each other on the back row, just like, wow. Okay, guys, we all know what we have to do here. And she talked her way out of that so fast and so brilliantly. Yeah, kudos to her.
So as we move into episode 2, away from Leanne being the first boot, you know, you mentioned Steffi before as the one to really, you know, head the Amigos, or at least the formation of it. This is the episode where you end up making a final 2 deal with her. There's some stuff involving Paul, which we'll certainly get into. But I noticed that you did say something along the lines of, hey, I made this deal, but I need to be a bit wary of her. Obviously, that's going to bear fruit way down the line once we get to the final 5. But give me your thoughts on Steffi and why you were so hesitant about her even that early on in Saula.
I could see how close she was to the guys as well. So I didn't know whether she was having that conversation with me alone or with them separately as well. She was also, I could see, very competitive and cutthroat. Openly. So that was her giveaway, is that she would do anything. And that scared me a little bit because I couldn't quite trust whether it was genuine or not. And I was in the situation a couple of times on the island where you are approached and told that you're part of this solid bond. And what do you do in that situation? I actually never thought it through. If you think it through in a like human logical fashion, I'll be in the final 2 with you, but in the back of my mind, I can't say to her out loud, I don't trust you yet. It's hang 5. So yeah, it can cause some problems down the line.
And another deal was made, as mentioned, when Paul approached the two of you and said, okay, let's work on this, the three of us. You seem pretty locked in with that until he says, you know what, maybe we could wait another vote. And at least at the time, admittedly, we were all a little confused as to what ended up happening between, you know, Nathan being the guaranteed boot and then Paul ending up going in this surprise vote. So talk me through a bit from your perspective, what exactly changed within that tribal council?
What happened with Paul was that he had the conversation about a tight 3. And when we saw him at reunion, we were actually teasing him about the tight 3, and that sealed his fate because he wasn't going home until he had a conversation with Nathan and Rob about a tight 3. And then one with me about a tight 3 with Steffi. And we put 2 and 2 together, and it was very close to tribal in the afternoon that we put those 2 together. And we were just literally looking at each other thinking, we can't trust this guy. We don't know which side of the fence he lies.
I know it was shown in the tribal council that, you know, Nico mentioning Nathan's foot being okay might have led people to not consider, you know, voting him out. Was that something that actually did change your mind? Or as you're alluding to, was it that everyone was sort of putting the pieces together as to Paul's game? So, you know, the votes were sort of piling against him anyway.
It was definitely both. I think we were all looking for an excuse not to send Nathan home. So the fact that he was able to continue and there was somebody else in our midst who we really couldn't trust. Yes. It was a contributing factor for sure.
So yeah, you keep Nathan along, you know, despite him being injured, the Amigos survive another day. You even bring C-Pay into the Amigos. So this is now just the Amigos as a tribe. Luckily, in episode 3, Saula is finally able to win some challenges. You guys are safe until the swap. But let's say that you did go to tribal council one more time. If you put yourself back in that moment, who do you think would have ended up going there?
That would have been a game changer, massive one, because, yeah, that bond was really tight, eh? We didn't even have those conversations. Well, I know I didn't. I think you'll find out from the others in due course. But, yeah, we didn't let that enter our minds, actually. Oh, and I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Interesting. Yes, that would have been sort of like across that bridge when you came to it.
Yes. And I think on that note, I don't think there has been an alliance like the Amigos in Survivor history, and that's coming from a very naive Survivor watcher, so that's my disclaimer. But those early days in the cyclone, wet all the time, freezing, starving, we literally bonded like family. Like family. Like, we know each other's birthdays. We know every detail about each other. We have each other's back until the end. Now, people cracked along the way. People made different decisions. But yeah, that intensity of that Amigos bond is a lot of the keys to its success.
I can imagine you sort of pumping everyone up by being like, hey, you think this cold is bad? Try hiking a mountain while tailing and you're trying to make a Survivor audition video.
Yeah.
So let's get to the swap here, because the Amigos get broken up. You and Rob move over to Ta'ala, where it's quite a different situation.
Oh, my darkest days.
Yeah, we're gonna absolutely get into it. I know you mentioned at one point you said there was an alliance forming between Meryl, Dante, and Rocco. Can you just talk to me a little bit about what you were sensing of those Ta'ala dynamics and how really on the outs you and Rob were?
Dynamics there were actually, it was humorous. Literally, there's so much low-level anxiety to the point that you just want to sit back and laugh, because there we all are basically vying for Rocco and Letitia to choose us. So there's Rocco and Letitia in the middle, Lao Mei, and you've got Meryl and Dante on one side and Robin and Nicole on the other. And who can tell the most personal stories? Who can be the most friendly? Who can go and buddy-buddy and talk about Cape Town on the beach? It was genuinely this war for affection and alliances. And yeah, it was stressful, to say the least.
They had to choose who to go to the dance with, and you're just trying to provide the best moves to show them, like, we'll have a good time.
And it was very apparent we were not the cool kids at the end of the day.
So I know that, you know, Rob obviously still was holding on to Paul's idol, and it'll be a little bit before you end up getting your own via your trip to with Nathan. But I mean, were you two talking about, like, you know, who you think of the two of you was more likely to go first if and when you went to tribal council?
That was the conversation, but we never really got to have it. And that was the panic station moment, because you were never alone to have those conversations. If you were, then you were suddenly a target and you lost the trust. So we had to have these quick side glance conversations as to, you know, who do you think? And maybe let's try and make a plan for one of us to be more of a target. Yeah, and that's why even at one point Rob was like, guys, I've lost this flint. I am a liability to this tribe. If we have to go to vote me off. Because then at least we know who to play the idol for.
Yeah, that's very true. So, you know, you spoke about Meryl and Dante. Obviously, you're going to have very complicated relationships with them moving forward. But I'm intrigued to know, what were your first impressions with them? I know it's going to get to a pretty sour dynamic between the three of you, but was it that way to start out?
No, it actually wasn't. So Meryl and I had some good bonding moments as moms. So we got shared stories of our kids. I kind of thought we had an alliance, but it was very obvious, hey, that Meryl and Dante were solid. They were basically a couple without being a couple. They had each other's back, and that Dante was very aloof and quiet, but still very cool. He played a very secret game. He played as if he was this very quiet, reclusive guy that's this amazing fisherman, and, you know, he just lives this hermit lifestyle. And I don't know so much. I think he was a lot sharper than what he let on in the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, that's very interesting. I feel like that matches up really nicely with his edit, where I remember in the beginning we're like, oh, who's this guy Dante? And then it's just as he becomes angrier and angrier, we're like, oh, this guy's Dante. Now I understand.
Yeah.
So in episode five, speaking of Meryl, that's the really epic, you know, slide puzzle challenge in the rain So Meryl ends up finding
this. She was a goddess. Let's have a moment.
She ends up finding this idol. Dante says that, oh, Robin Nicole saw you take it. Is that true? Or was that just sort of a random observation from him?
No, I didn't see it. I'm so glad that he thought we did, but I did not see that happen. She could have kept it and none of us would have known.
So then in that case, when you get back to camp and she tells you about it, what was your reaction? Was it a, oh, thank God she's drawing a target to herself, or a, oh, the opposition has an idol, I'm screwed?
Absolute elation, because I don't know. Again, I'm not a Survivor expert, but the minute an idol enters the equation, it's like a death rate. You almost don't want an idol. You don't want anybody to know you've got an idol. And now suddenly Meryl has an idol. It's a weakness once people know about it.
Well, I guess speaking of that, let's get to the Island of Secrets, because you're about to have your own little idol adventure soon.
Exactly.
So you get here with Nathan, and I want to talk more about the emotional element of it first, because like you said, you were very tight with Nathan. You guys are finally able to meet back up, confer a bit, and Nathan, you know, really breaks down to you about missing his family. Talk to me a bit about that experience, about reconnecting with him, especially after you were in such dire straits the past week or so.
Yeah, so I think seeing Nathan, that's exactly what it was. We had been in Ta'alo Island of Hell, and there's no safe place. I can't describe the feeling, but not even Rob and I could have these moments of safe conversation. From the minute you open your eyes to the minute you're asleep, even while you're sleeping, you are alert. To be able to be on the Island of Secrets alone with my brother, who we've literally shared our entire life stories with at Sa'ula, it was like home. We could just share. And I was ready to like, feel sorry for me, please, Nathan, because this is, and then we didn't even get there. It was him that needed to talk. And Yeah.
And we're obviously going to get to that Nathan vote later on. And, you know, whether or not it was a question of weakness, did that at all inform your ultimate decision? Were you looking back of, well, Nathan, I know, is very emotionally vulnerable with his family, or was that just sort of, you know, water under the bridge and you guys were able to move on from it?
So I don't know if this answers your question or not, but essentially my gameplay was, it's hard to call it a gameplay or a strategy. I knew what I wanted to do in my mind, but I was genuinely forming relationships all the way, real close friendships and bonds with these people, which I had no problem ending because it's a game. It still doesn't mean we can't be friends afterwards, but I don't think that a lot of people shared that sentiment. Mm. Nathan certainly did, but it was, listen, we'll cry our hearts out together. We'll discuss this all night, you know, but at the end of the day, if you need to go home, then yeah, it's a game.
Well, we will certainly get to that, because I know that was a big moment, even referenced many times during the reunion as well. But after all the tears have dried and the rain has dried, you two decide to come up with this lie, which I would say, I know that we made a joke throughout the season about, you know, Island of Secrets lies. I know Shannon loves to play Name That Lie. This still honestly might take the cake for me, in my opinion. I would just love to hear whose, you know, idea was what, and why you decided to come up with this particular lie about, you know, Nathan picking a phone call home, you getting half an idol with a clue for the other idol buried back at camp.
So actually, credit to Nathan, because we knew we had to come up with something, and he'd watched the previous season, and I think there was a mobile device sponsor. Mm-hmm. So we figured, let's make it like a product placement vibe, because pretty the same sponsor would be here the next season. So it was a product spotlight and you got to make a phone call.
I love that. You basically came up with your own like in-brand sponsorship that never actually occurred.
It would have been nice if that had followed up with a legitimate sponsorship, but it wasn't part of the whole storyline. So we kind of lost some ground on that later on. But the lie about the clue and hiding the idol, I knew I couldn't go back with a full idol because then I'm Meryl. I'm the next target. So, and I could take back my half idol with the pamphlet that said it's a half idol, the leaflet.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when you went back there, I know you had said, you know, you put in this big performance. I mean, was there anything, it's weird to ask, you know, a Survivor about an acting performance, admittedly, but was there anything you channeled when, you know, made those tears come out and you really like made it believable as to this is what I got and this is what happened on Island of Secrets?
So sitting on the beach with Rob afterwards, having that little moment where I updated him that it wasn't real, I realized, wow, I have a future in acting, because even though not all of them believed it, I know, I did not think that I could cry on demand. But in saying that, it was channeling. Hey, that was full on method acting. That was all I had to do was say my kids. And I, even just saying out loud, I missed a phone call with my children. It felt like reality. I had not thought about my kids. You know, you close off that, not like on that level. And also spending that entire night emotionally drained, talking about real life issues with Nathan. Then I arrived that next morning, I was a mess, an absolute mess. It wasn't hard to cry.
So we see from confessional that, you know, your old friends, Dante and Meryl, are saying, there's a lot that stinks from the story that you're telling. Did you get a sense in the moment that that was true? Or did you really think that your performance warmed them over?
No, I knew it wasn't sold. And I've learned to trust my gut through the process. That was literally what I did the entire time. I really listened to my gut. And you can see people's body language and their facial expressions. And I knew in the moment who was with me and believing me and who wasn't. That was the beginning of the eye rolling, I think, that day.
Yeah. So talk to me a bit about that gut thing just briefly, because, you know, you mention it a lot and we hear it a lot from Survivor players, but I can't imagine, especially when your gut is empty and not full of food, but having to listen to your instincts when your brain is probably giving you all these different types of messages about what people are telling you. How difficult was that conflict in your gameplay?
For me, it wasn't that difficult. Hey, I had a lot of information, and this we'll get to a bit later, I'm sure, but Rob and I were one person. So I was getting much more information, and so was he, than a lot of other people. So your brain is not telling you lies as much. I don't know if that answers your question, but essentially you have to just trust if somebody's not making eye contact or they're shifting around. And I know that sounds like weird psychology stuff, but you can feel it start to you. You can genuinely feel it. Even Mubba said that she knew in her gut that she should have played her idol, but she listened to somebody telling her she was safe.
Right, exactly. Well, there were certainly some reactions as a follow-up to your Island of Secrets lie, you have a feeling that you're about to swap, and Meryl's like, oh, Nicole, why don't you go dig for that other half of the idol? And I'll admit you might have produced some of the most half-hearted digging I think I've ever seen. What was sort of going through?
Listen,
your
I
head?
Was exhausted. I thought that was full-hearted digging.
So, what was your thought process going through? Were you really like, oh crap, I better, you know, go through with this, even though I already have two halves of the idol?
Do you know how soul-destroying it is when you are so exhausted and you have to pick up that spade and dig in this very solid earth for something you know that is not there? Knowing that they probably don't believe you anyway, but you kind of screwed yourself, so let's go dig.
Just keep. I mean, listen, it was a good warm-up for the challenge, I guess. So it's some good cardio to get in early on.
Because
you're going to swap once again. Goodbye, Island of Hell. Welcome back to Saula. I want to speak about a couple of the relationships you made in Saula, which are going to be very interesting. One of the first things we see is Darrow come to you and say, I really like you because of your positive vibes. He ends up telling you about Jacques' idol, which is really going to come into play later on. Darrow, obviously a big character in his own right, but what was your initial perception of this guy when he approached you in Saula?
Oh, I love that guy. He is such a character. And when he approached me, like, fantastic as another ally, but he's saying this to everybody. I knew straight away that he was saying the same thing to everybody.
Oh, interesting. Because I know there's a big perception of, you know, Darrow sort of, you know, having loose lips and telling everybody everything. So that was prevalent even at that time.
Yes, I felt that from the beginning, and I think it served him well in his own respective game plan. But I kind of felt like he would be a good ally to keep around as long as we made him believe that he was part of our team.
So I know that you had interacted with two previous Laomedes in Rocco and Letitia. Now you get two more in Jeff and Mabba, who obviously are going to have a very interesting situation with, but you know, they come and they initially pitch you this alliance with you and Nathan. What was your initial thoughts on the two of them?
Well, immediately they're not Meryl and Dante, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So yeah, we have numbers. This is amazing. This is four of us against two of them. But more than that, I genuinely like them. Very cool. amicable people. We started sharing, developing good bonds. And listen, I know that Jeffrey has massive unresolved reservations about me and what happened later. But for the right then and there, if we can take a snapshot of that beach, what a great guy. Like, I have nothing bad to say about him. Loved hanging out and chatting and laughing. We really spent amazing time together. And I know that sounds like a world peace answer, but genuine, Jeffrey's an epic guy. I really loved hanging out.
Kubis still voted for you despite the world peace thing. So I think people are fine with that.
I love Kubis. Love him to death.
So yeah. Amidst all this, we have yet another dance, double date dance thing going on here, where now Dante and Meryl are trying to convince Jeff and Mava to vote with them. And Dante in particular is really going to be throwing you under the bus here. Was that, you know, as prevalent to you out there as it was to us watching?
So I knew what they would try, and I subtly dropped it into conversations with Jeffrey and Mubba along the way. Like, yeah, they're going to say some things, you know, you prep them, you line them up so that when they have those conversations with Meryl and Dante, they're like, oh yeah, I knew you'd say this. I knew you'd come to me and start slating people already. And so we could kind of set that up before those conversations happened. Yeah.
So, all right, the time has finally come. Let's get to the Nathan vote here in episode 8, because yeah, we set up you, Nate, Jeff, and Mava are working together when all of a sudden you, Jeff, and Mava talk with Darrow and decide we're going to have to get rid of Nathan in this moment. Now, I think looking back, and especially from what you and Jeff said at the reunion, it seemed like this became a vote more so based on challenge strength. But I would love to hear from your own emotional perspective. Like you said, you know, the game's the game. You did have solid connections with him. But what was your process like to eventually decide to get rid of Nathan here?
That was so tough. I mean, just proviso to that, I think it was really nice. This ecstasy and elation arriving on a beach. I love that. Solar Beach, by the way, but the people on it, and suddenly flipping that Meryl and Dante are on the outs. I relished that situation more than I should have on the inside between you and I and the entire world. But from there to go into this bombshell of, but we need to send Nate home. And it wasn't my idea. It was a very honest conversation we all had to have. And that was the decision that I've gone back and forth from in my head so, so, so many times, because ultimately it put Meryl the first member of the jury, and that it poisoned the pool from the beginning because of that deep resentment that had grown there because of that situation. But in hindsight, this is the other flip side. Had I walked in to a merge with Nathan on my arm as my amigo, joining Rob and Steffi and Sipe, we would have been the biggest targets, and we would have unified the rest of the tribe against us. And slowly, one by one, we would have been voted off. So I came into Merge because of that decision. And I know we can talk about it more later, but I came into Merge this, Nicole, scandalous. How could you do that to Rob? You might be going home next or next or next. We're not worried about her. And they didn't realize how strong that connection was with Rob, with the amigos, that I was going to be okay. Instead, we just looked broken and a mess. And that worked in our favor.
So even if you knew that, you know, hey, this is the vote right before Merge, you still would have slided towards voting Nate out for those reasons?
That would be brutal to actually do that. I would like to say that I could have had the absolute cutthroat game plan to do that. At the time, it was for different reasons. And as we've discussed them all, it was not that. I would love to be able to say that I was so focused on my game, knowing that I went in with Nathan, it would be bad for me. I wouldn't have been that smart.
Well, on the sideline of all this Nathan stuff is this tribal council where Jeff and Dante certainly have a war of words. I believe there's a statement about hugging someone with a fist in there. I cannot imagine what it was like being there at the time while all this verbal sparring was occurring, especially knowing that all this was sort of going to be the sideshow to the fact that someone else is going to be completely blindsided.
Yes, it was a nice distraction from the business at hand, I suppose. yeah.
So There's a statement from this tribal council that I want to bring up here where you said, you know, I came into this game to be brave, to be true, and to be a hero. And one of the interesting, you know, pieces of vocabulary you've used throughout your time in Samoa was this idea of, you know, being the hero, being the good guy, etc., which I know you talked about with yourself. You talked about it with other people on the island as well. Where did that mentality come from? And did you ever worry that, you know, when you call yourself and someone else the good guy, that, you know, inevitably the people that aren't the good guys are the bad guys by comparison?
Yes. Insert eye roll here. Asterisk. I think that's the hidden gift of Survivor, is this self-awareness. It's a heightened appreciation of who you really are. And I went there trying to maintain some semblance of integrity. But I think, let me clear one thing up. And this is what nobody knew. Every time I spoke about integrity, it was, guys, I'm only actually loyal to one person, and maybe three if they keep playing the game like they're playing. You're an accessory until I don't need you anymore. That's brutal. But genuinely, we're friends, we're mates, we are an alliance. But if you cross lines with my original alliance, you're out. That is the rules of engagement. It's not personal. You cannot have complete integrity and never lie in the game of Survivor. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. But I, except for bar 24 hours at the end of the game, I stuck true to those, that original alliance and commitment that I made at all costs, even when it almost cost me.
So then how does that connect to the idea of, you know, heroism and being a good guy? Is that sort of a tenet of that, that you stay true to the people that you promised?
Well, it's quite funny watching back, because you have these moments where you're like, damn, that was so powerful. And then you have other moments when you're watching yourself and you're like, oh, she's insufferable. Like, wow, did I genuinely believe that? And especially the arrogance, I think, at that final four, just celebrating in the shelter, I think with Darrow and Rob, like, guys, we made it. The good guys made it to the end. And I think by that I meant, listen, it was a big deal for Rob and I to go to the end. That was the plan from day one, and we actually did it. But yeah, by default, that means that everybody else was a bad guy. I think that in my mind, I really simplified it down just so that I could feel like I had real game integrity. I simplified it down to Rob and that alliance. That is my home. That is my line I won't cross. And then everybody outside of that is the bad guy. And we're playing teams, you know, us versus the world. And it's not black and white, it's gray, because, and it also comes down to my personality. I am a lover of people, like genuine. I let you in. If you don't like me at first, you will like me eventually. And that creates a lot of anger and resentment when you betray them, when they think that it was, yeah, really a close bond, which it was, but it's also a game.
Well,
so, yeah, I suppose if you're going back to heroism and integrity and all of that, I had integrity to my original alliance, and I'm incredibly proud of that. But aside from that, there is no integrity in the game of Survivor. Steffi even referred to it in a recent interview. She said, Survivor is like real life, but intensified. And I genuinely believe that. Nathan and I had these conversations. This is life. This is like a microcosm of real life. No, no, it is not. It is not even close. The extremes that you are pushed to in those environments, you do not find that in real life. And you can ask other castaways. I'm sure you do all the time. It feels like you've been to war together. And there's certain contexts and experiences and emotions that only you as a collective will understand and relate to. So no, it's not real life. And the person you are there, it's pushed a little bit further than normal humanity. But in saying that, I know I'm rambling and I'm monologuing here, but I think just to conclude this little idea, I know that there've been a lot of people that have had castaways that are really battling to process the game, accept the game, and move on. And I think that comes from a massive gap between accepting the person you saw on TV and who you feel you are in real life. And I think once you can correlate those two and understand that and process that, you can begin to accept it.
Absolutely. And we'll certainly get into some more tenets of that as the game progresses, because suffice it to say, Meryl and Dante are not very happy with what happened. And this was a little, you know, confrontation where I think you try to approach them and Dante blows up on you. What was your intention in trying to talk with them that night, especially knowing that emotions were running high?
I mean, I was the first one to say, guys, let's just talk in the morning, but they wouldn't stop. You know, they were hanging about around camp, lying in the hammock, going on and on about it. And I think I just wanted to appease things. Like, guys, we didn't write your names down. It was never about you. You should feel happy. You should feel relieved. We couldn't trust you with this information. We weren't close like that. Dante doesn't like being cornered. And I think he felt like he was completely disempowered, completely vulnerable. And it caused him to lash out.
So then, you know, you get to go home, you end up merging here, and obviously you have a little bit of explaining to do with your fellow amigos as you go to Rob and Sipe, and you seem to get in good with them. But can you talk to me a bit more about sort of the narrative that you would come up with to talk with them to try to, you know, get back in their good graces and bring back together the amigos?
That was rough, hey? Those few days, were more like a week, I think, of feeling like the pimple on Manu Malo, essentially. You actually feel like the most despised human being on earth. Nobody wants to talk to you. Nobody wants to look you in the eyes. You have completely lost their trust. And to be able to claw that back, it became our primary focus. But you can't come from a place of desperation. And when you do that, then it pushes people even further away. I just had to be patient and, like, humble in what I'd done. Like, genuinely, guys, this is bad. I know what coming here without Nathan is a deal breaker. But hopefully you can see where I came from and that, you know, I've still got our best interests as an alliance at heart.
Mm-hmm. And did you feel sort of in the moment that they were genuinely accepting of you, or did you feel like there was still some, you know, anxiety going on between you and them?
No. There was massive anxiety, massive resentment, no understanding of why I could have possibly done that. And then there's that one classic tweet meme of Rob holding the machete and it's captioned, you know, where is Nate, essentially, in more colorful language. That's my meme of the season. But genuinely, that's how he felt. And then suddenly I went from having lost one brother to having lost two. And now I don't have anybody to trust. You are the outcast. To have to claw that back was tough. Really, really tough. I mean, I had to spoon with Dante that night.
Oh, wow. It got to that point?
Yes.
Wow. Desperation. Yeah. Desperation. Well, I guess one way you could bring people back into the fold is by spouting off some old family recipes, as you did in this first immunity challenge. So as you said, you're sort of, you know, not the biggest fan of Survivor. So I don't think you realize this. There was actually somebody on a recent U.S. season who actually did a similar strategy as yours. It wasn't exactly recipes, but he talked and talked for 6 hours to win an endurance challenge. So obviously you were unintentionally channeling him. But what was your thinking behind going through the cookbook, as it were, while you're in this challenge?
I think I just snapped, eh? The emotional stress at that point, after being into Arlo, then the Nathan vote, and then not being welcomed back with open arms, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to live this moment and live my best life. And how do you hold your hands over your head for that long? How is it even humanly possible? The first 5 minutes, we all felt like we were dying, and you realize, okay, well, the pain starts to fade, and then there's numbness, and then there's cold, and there's all these sensations. I had to distract myself, and I actually didn't really give a stuff about anyone else and what they thought at that point. I was really over it. I kind of snapped.
So, you know, Rob makes this point to get rid of Meryl sort of being, you know, the bigger social threat. But as you mentioned, sending Meryl to the jury early may have, you know, not necessarily helped the opinion about you as those weeks progress. I mean, I guess looking back, if Dante was sent instead of Meryl to be the first member of the jury, do you think things would have changed at all looking back?
No, I don't think so. I think it was just a matter of both Meryl and Dante having to go, and Meryl went first. Whether she'd arrived there first or third or fourth, it still would have polluted that pool. So the only solution would have been for her to be voted off before merge. But that wasn't an option. So, yeah, I don't think it would have changed things at all.
After they end up voting off Meryl, this is when you find out about the Spit Shaker 7 that occurred with everybody else on the other Ta'alo, yep. Your old cursed tribe. Now, obviously, you were still trying to, you know, get in back with your former amigos. Did that scare you at all, finding out that they actually had made another deal?
Completely. I mean, I was already the not cool kid. And then you arrive and they've got like a name and I'm not part of it. Why? And inside I'm like dying. Like, how do I get to be one of them? And yeah, that conversation started happening, but I had to be very cool, calm and collected on the outside. Like, I don't really care about you and your seven. But seven! There's seven of you. I honestly felt screwed.
Well, I noticed that when you actually get your way into the seven, you had the nice little hand signal and everything. So I could tell you were very excited about becoming a part of it eventually.
So excited. Yes.
Well, this vote is also when Jeff ends up going. And he's going to bring this up at the final tribal council as where, you know, you give him a hug and, you know, he talks later about, you know, you said, I said I would never write your name down. I'm holding to that promise. But you spoke about your first thoughts on Jeff. Talk to me about the process from your perspective of getting rid of him, especially knowing how he's going to feel about you from a juror's perspective.
So I could feel Jeff becoming a little bit more insecure and worried about his position in the tribe as those last couple of days went on. And he became a bit more nervous, started asking everybody questions and me as well. And at certain points, he wasn't the immediate target, the next one to go. But then you get to a point where you know, okay, it's going to be Jeffrey tonight. And then he approaches you with these questions. Dude, it doesn't matter how much I love you and how great conversations we've had. He looked me in the eyes and he says, Nicole, I've got you tonight. Because I was apparently also on the out, in inverted commas. It was one of us, although I had already started taking steps to re-cement myself in the amigos. But I could see that panic in his eyes and he was wanting some reassurance. And I didn't lie to him. Hey, I didn't say, I won't write your name down. I actually can't remember exactly the context of the conversation. But I knew he walked away from that encounter thinking, Nicole's got my back. And I was like, I don't know. How do you tell someone you don't have their back? How do you tell them that it's them tonight? You don't. You can't. And I wished I could have changed that situation. I wished I could have given him a heads up. But that would cross my original alliance with Rob and the amigos. So it was never a difficult decision to make those decisions. It sucked a little bit. And I knew that they were going to hate me afterwards. But once you cross that line, that's the line's been drawn.
Well, speaking of Jeff, something that I really wanted to know is obviously when he becomes a juror, we're going to see him be very vocal and very outright about his feelings towards the thing that you say at tribal council. I know we'll talk later about how you said, you know, you don't really consider the jury when you're developing your current game plan. But how obvious was it from sitting at tribal council what he was doing and how he was feeling? And how did that affect the way that you, you know, felt about him and the game in general?
No, it was rough, hey? But it was a good part of my process, which I'll get to just now. But to sit there and tribal after tribal, you know, have these people literally mocking every word that you say, eye rolling, laughing, that was hard. And knowing that those people are ultimately going to vote. In one breath, I knew strategically it wasn't a bad thing because it makes the others less worried about me. Because the jury hates you. So I know I'm going to go further in the game, which is fantastic. But in the other breath, it's really difficult to have to sit there and endure that. Especially when you can't defend yourself. I think that was the hardest.
So, you know, when it comes to trying to weigh how much might I change my game based on the way people were reacting, were you more so outweighed by that first idea that, oh, this is making me look like a better person to take to the end, so let me just, you know, have him say his piece in a manner of speaking?
I think I'd already made my bed at that point. You know, if you start changing your game plan based on the jury's reactions, we could see Jacques doing it. It was very obvious. He would butter people up. He would actually address the jury. He would make eye contact and smile. And we all saw that. And then you don't survive the island. you might survive really well and thrive in front of the jury, but you have to actually survive the island first. And if you start playing for the jury, playing up in front of the jury, then you're going to become a target immediately. So I knew I couldn't do that.
Episode 11 is where you end up going to Island of Secrets with Kubus, where you have this like super secret immunity challenge. But this is where the two of you become close to the point where you show him the half idol. You know, you talk about putting him in the final four. Talk to me a bit about your relationship with him.
So I genuinely love Kubus as a human being. I love him to death. He's one of the coolest people you will ever meet in and outside of the game. And we had a really great time on the Island of Secrets. Making those promises, I genuinely believed I could keep them. I think I knew that it would be Rob and I. And that was my plan. But I thought there was space for Kubus. But then as soon as we got back, I realized quickly that Kubus wasn't part of the Amigo plan. And that was tough, eh? Because it doesn't matter what connection you've made or promises you've made, go back. What line did you draw? What original promises did you make? So we have the discussions and we make the suggestions, but it was the right call at the end of the day. Kubus had to go home, but provisor, Kubus was not supposed to go home the night he went home. And yes, for that, you know, that was the only vote I didn't see coming.
Yeah, well, I think everyone sans Steffi did not see that vote coming, to be fair, including the guy who did not play his idol.
Wow, guys. That night. Well.
Well, we're about to get into that episode, but before we get into it, so obviously, you come back from iOS, and now you get approached to say, okay, we're getting rid of CPay. How shocked were you in that moment as to how quickly plans changed while you were away?
Yeah, shocked, hey. I couldn't believe I was blind to her other plans. And I think that it came out later just how I want to say the word devious, but that's very subjective. I actually would prefer to say smart and cunning, because she was playing a very intentional game, forming other strategic alliances. But when you start doing that, you'll get caught out. And Rob and I actually chat about it, and we would say, it's almost as if our game plan was to remain calm and watch. And slowly, one by one, everybody else cracks. And as soon as that crack appears, we eliminated it, because it shows that that person is breaking and is about to do something dangerous, and we can't have them around anymore. So for CPay, an integral part of the Amigos, who I have trusted with my half idol, for her to go and start talking about getting rid of both of her children, Steffi and I, for reasons we still don't understand, because we were not having massive drama between us, that was an immediate sign for red flag, you're out.
Mm-hmm. So another person who you sort of have that feeling with, who I guess from your perspective, quote unquote, cracked, was Mike. And we're not going to get into, you know, Mike's big move until a little bit. But what I found so interesting is that Mike was convinced that you would join him to take out somebody like Rob or somebody like Steffi. Even the number of times that you voted with Rob, he still was convinced time after time that you would be the one to vote with him, until that infamous tribal council where you admit to him, like, yeah, sorry, I was the one that was outing your plans. Talk to me about your relationship with him and why he was so convinced time after time that you were on his side, despite it not being the fact.
I think that he was so desperate for an alliance and for a safe place, that just by merely sitting with him and hearing him out and listening to his plans and his strategies and his numbers and his forecasts, and it was fascinating. And then you just sit there quietly and you nod. He's like, she's in. I didn't say much. I definitely reinforced his belief in the fact that we were a team. But, you know, I did that with everybody. Mike genuinely believed that I would betray Rob for him. And I don't know, I must be a really, really good actress and maybe slightly pathological tendencies. I don't know.
As long as they don't make you dig, I think you're going to be pretty good in terms of your auditions.
Yes, digging was bad.
Before we move on, we're going to take a quick break to listen to a word from our sponsors. And we are back, so let's keep on keeping on. Before we get into, obviously, the big incident that's soon to occur, I do want to point out one quick thing. You had that really interesting reward challenge where you can choose either food or family or an advantage, and you choose to go for food, which sort of brings you to pieces when, you know, you realize that you went for this over getting letters from home. What made you make that choice, considering how much you regretted it?
Now, if I'm very honest, I chose the one I knew would be least contested because I desperately needed to win something. And I knew that everybody would be desperate for those letters. And if I went up in a strength challenge like that, an arm challenge, basically, against, you know, someone like Mike or even Durao, or I don't know, they would all beat me. So I needed to pick one that nobody wanted. Nobody wants food. And I was starving. Hey, I was hungry.
Yeah. And listen, you got to drink, basically, you got to house an entire bottle of wine. So that probably must have helped.
Can we have a minute for my tolerance of alcohol? I had an entire carafe and walked straight off the beach.
Wow. Listen, all the power to you, especially considering that was nearly a month into the game and you were still able to pull that down. I do admire you for that.
There's a lot of good calories in wine and vitamins, I think, or something. Tannins. There it is.
Yeah, exactly. And it makes you feel good at the end of the day as well, for maybe different reasons.
Yes.
All right, so we need to go from the high to the low here. We need to talk about this, as we coined it, the Mother Jacques incident, where we see Jacques come back after not playing his idol, you know, make his stand against the rest of the tribe, and him get, from our perspective, shunned as a result. And I'm sure you felt the brunt of what a lot of people were thinking at the time based on what went down. But I would love to hear your side of the story as to, you know, how you perceived the incident, what led to the treatment of Jacques from your perspective, etc.
It's actually really cool that we get to digest this afterwards. I think that I would love you to give us your opinion once you've spoken to everybody that was there that night. Because definitely, you know, we came down on him hard. But given the context of the night, coming back with the high emotions, he was genuinely being patted on the back and high-fived for his brave, bold move that he made. And then he sat down in front of people, and mostly, I mean, right in front of Letitia. And I think we got a little bit protective as well. You don't speak like that in front of, and I know that's being very like, oh, you don't speak like that, so condescending and righteous. But it was just too far. And whether the cameras could effectively capture that intensity of the moment or not, I don't know, because there's two sides of it. But what we felt was a righteous indignation. It was an anger for a purpose. And we felt like that we were standing up against a bully that night, because he felt like the bully on the island. And it was almost like he had self-appointed him as himself as god of the island. And perhaps coming from that high and that intense moment, he managed to pull that off a tribal. Coming back, he thought he could run the ship. It was very arrogant, and it just struck a really raw nerve with everybody. And yeah, when we did quote unquote bully him, I think we also need to have a look at the fact that we did say, listen, if you go down the beach alone with Jacques having long conversations, we know exactly what you're doing. You're planning to take out the biggest of the game. But we definitely didn't say, don't sit with him, don't talk to him, don't make eye contact. These are two very different things.
Mm. So, you know, looking back in the moment, obviously there's, you know, doing it for game reasons. Did you ever think in the moment of like, hey, we're taking things a bit too far, especially because, you know, we have heard emotional reactions. We saw what happened to Steffi. We heard, you know, Rob kicking coconuts. I know Letitia was very emotional about it. Did you ever think that there was a perspective of, are we doing too much of this, even if we do believe that Jacques is the bad guy in this scenario?
No, maybe on the night because emotions were high, possibly. Yeah, I think in general, there was this feeling of we want to protect. I don't know. Honestly, I'm sorry. I'm sitting with a four-year-old on my lap and a cat on my shoulder. So if I sound distracted, I'm going to be sorting out a home survival situation.
Wow. So you have so many great relationships with people on the island. You have a relationship with children and animals as well. You're the ultimate social queen, Nicole.
I actually do have children. Like I'm a nurturing human being in general. No, that night was messed up on a number of levels. Yes, I would like to go back and be a little bit more diplomatic, for sure. Mm-hmm. I think that emotions were high on all fronts. But yeah, it happened the way that I don't regret standing up for what we believe was right, but we could have done it in a better way, definitely.
Well, in that episode is when you also claim your first and ultimately was going to be your only immunity win. Now, as someone who admittedly at the end of her game is going to say, you know, outplay was never something I could really play into, what was that feeling like to actually win a challenge, knowing how, you know, I guess you had underrated yourself going into it?
It was one of the greatest days of my life. I can't actually explain that because I went for the challenges, the Bear Grylls survival vibes, the extreme conditions. And then you're in this amazing challenge, which for me, I was super focused going into it, but I knew I'd have to push myself so hard. It was nuts. It was underwater. It was running through waist deep water when your quads are burning. It was, yeah, physical, mental, putting together that puzzle. And I didn't know at the end whether I would actually have it, going head to head with Lark on a puzzle. I mean, he's an engineer. And so, yeah, it was a really, really cool win. I love that. And I'll celebrate that one for sure.
So Maba ends up going here after not playing her idol. And in the next episode is when Letitia comes to you and says, hey, an all-female alliance would be cool, which is going to bear fruit as well, you know, especially after Jacques goes, when we get into like the final five territory. What were your feelings initially when she pitched you on this, considering what you had already thought you had set up with the Amigos?
It was one of great interest and fascination and entertainment. And genuinely, you standing around a well with women, you just say, sure, it's a great idea. But there's no ways on earth that's going to happen. And I thought it was a fleeting idea. I vastly underestimated Letitia's conniving plans. Vastly.
Well, yeah, I want to talk about that for a second, because I know that we had spoken on the podcast about how there was a little while where we weren't entirely sure what Letitia's game plan was. Was that a similar sense out there? What was your perception of Letitia, I guess, up until that moment?
Yes. Yeah, so I thought she was just hanging on as long as she could to prove a point to people back home. But I didn't realize that she genuinely thought she had a shot. And I know that sounds very condescending because everybody has a shot. But I definitely underestimated her, and she is tough, tough as nails. I had some really cool conversations with her, even back on Ta'alo when Rob and I were desperately trying to worm our way into that relationship, hopelessly. And yeah, we related, you know, as moms, you know, she's got a career in healthcare. I come as a background as a pharmacist. I thought there's some cool ground, common ground here. She held herself back and held herself together. And I think you could see that at reunion. She's an emblazoned, passionate, vocal stalwart. I don't know how to describe her other than that. And we underestimated her.
So speaking of motherhood, let's get to the family visit, because that is a situation rife with emotion. I want to talk about, I guess we'll talk about the good first. Let's talk about you seeing Clint. And Clint whispers in your ear, do whatever it takes. It's a moment that you'll reference a couple times in the next few episodes. Did that moment change the way that you viewed your game at all?
Definitely. It shook me a little bit. Like, what are you doing here? Are you taking it seriously as a game? You are so close to the end. Make sure you do whatever it takes. Yes, it did. But that day, it's such a smart plan, and we discussed it around the fire so many times, to have your family come all the way out there when you are so deprived of that intense, close safety and connection. It is, it throws you upside down and inside out completely. I mean, I didn't wash my shirt for 4 days afterwards because it still smelled like Clint. That level of intense security that you felt when you're back in your loved one's arms. It was an amazing moment, but then to have that stripped away, it felt brutal. And in hindsight, I should never have taken it personally, because if I wanted family visit, I should have won it for myself. And even if you look back at the episode, it says, you can see me saying openly, if I win family visit reward, I would probably take Steffi and Letitia, because it is a maternal, it's a very emotional, feminine thing. I think that was my reasoning. So I should never have taken personally that I wasn't chosen.
Yeah, it's complicated, like you said, because you were aware of the plan going in, but I can imagine just, you know, seeing Clint and having that taken away made things so difficult. I mean, when you were out there on the Island of Secrets, was that, were you just, you know, frustrated the entire time? Were Mike and Darrell helping or hurting you at all when it came to those ideas?
I was gutted, hey? I don't think I stopped crying for a good couple of hours. I was sobbing. Walking off that beach, you can't see my face, but that real guttural sobbing. It was definitely a low moment for me. I felt that bubble had been burst. That, oh, wait, you're actually a human being outside of this game. You've got a family back home waiting for you. Yeah. And I think also a missed opportunity to find out how my kids were. I think that was, yeah, I was gutted. I was not a pleasant human being to be around on the island. Just very low, quiet, sad.
Right. And then I would say, you know, there's a little bit of anger that comes out in that tribal council when Rob asks you publicly, hey, did anything happen in Island of Secrets? And I think you sort of rebuke him by saying, well, you know, why do you have to feel paranoid about it? I would tell you if it was. I know, obviously, again, that'll be another, some more water under the bridge. But what was your feeling in that moment when he, you know, the first time you see him after he decides not to pick you and he asks you that question?
It kind of felt, I was so angry with him in that moment. I understood why he did it. I agreed with it in principle, but I was deeply angry. And it actually felt kind of good to just be angry with him and not try and be an alliance or with anybody. Just genuinely wear your heart on your sleeve. And to have him concerned enough at tribal about my state of mind that he's asking me publicly if everything's okay, it was good.
At least you went to Bad Island, so I think that's sort of like a nice consolation prize, which we'll certainly
that
get
was
into.
Very cool.
So the beginning of this penultimate episode, which is really, you know, I feel like when you like you said, you were not a puppet, you were a co-collaborator, but this is when we see, I feel like, you know, as you said, you're going to do whatever it takes to win. And we see it here when you're having your chat with Steffi and Letitia and you decide to reveal about the idol to not only Letitia, but Steffi, who it turned out you hadn't really known about that entire situation. What was your intention behind doing that? And did you fear at all that, you know, Steffi might say, she didn't tell me about that for so long. What else is she not telling me about?
So, yes, it was a very messed up 24 hours. I think that it's a little bit blurry exact timelines. But I remember obviously Clint saying to me, do whatever it takes. And then being so mad at Rob that I wanted to punch him in the face, quote unquote. So being sitting there with Steffi, I was vulnerable. And that moment when everybody cracks, that was my moment, I think. Sadly enough, I thought that I was immune. I thought I could hold this calm pace right till the end, and I didn't. I cracked in that original line that I set. I dropped my guard on, and I thought, well, let me buy some trust with these guys, with the idol, because I knew gut again, body language, eye contact. Letitia had never trusted me, never liked me from the minute I came back because I threatened her relationship with Rob. I decided to try and build that trust, I suppose, as a plan B. But I could also tell that there were things that they were holding back from me, which I was right with. I mean, I only found out watching the episode that Letitia and Steffi were busy trying to blindside me next.
Oh,
so, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll definitely get into that, you know, Island of Secrets lie as well. But before we do, you do go to Bat Island, and we see at least from the edit that you are on board with blindsiding Rob, if possible, you know, allowing him to not play his idol. This is when you float out the idea to him of, oh, wouldn't it be fun if we all didn't play our idols to, you know, show the jury in defiance. At that point, given what you just said, how committed were you to the plan of getting rid of him?
100%.
Interesting.
I was sold on that idea of getting rid of Rob, and but I had this niggle, and I was very conflicted inside, but I've committed. This is my new game plan. I've got to go with it. And the whole time inside, I'm screaming, but what are you doing? And I think that only really came out a little bit later. But yeah.
Well, from your perspective, and obviously we'll hear Rob's side of things, I mean, do you think that was yet another award-winning acting performance for me? Do you legitimately think that had Rob not won immunity, that he would have been convinced to not play his idol?
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I could have gone through with it. That I will say. But at the time on Bat Island, yes, there was moments when he looked me in the eyes and said, all the way to the end. And inside I'm thinking, no, but nodding my head. So yes, acting 101 for sure.
So Rob ends up winning immunity, and it seems like the plan is to vote out Darrow. From what we saw again on the edit, it seemed like you were untrusting of Letitia's story about being an island of secrets, which caused you to go to Rob and ultimately leads to the plan against Steffi, which we'll certainly get into. Was that the actual trigger for you?
So there were a couple of things that day. And again, it's this underlying stress and worry in my gut that something wasn't adding up, but I couldn't put my finger on it. I didn't know that Steffi had been on Island of Secrets with Gina. That definitely would have changed everything for me. But I knew something was off, and it was in Steffi's behavior mostly, which, in her credit, I suppose she's not a great liar, because she's so hungry for what she wants that she'll do it at all costs, and then she outs herself. So I actually remember a moment when I saw her and Darrow just spending time together on the beach, laughing and carrying on, and I'd known what had been said about him a few hours before. And I suddenly realized, at this moment dawn on me, that she's busy garnering jury votes. And she's being really smart, and she's actually playing the game. And I started to think, well, you know, you're being played. Yeah. And that was one of the moments that definitely contributed towards my change of heart.
I want to give you the opportunity to speak about this. The woman empowerment thing, because I understand your perspective, but I think it's a proper opportunity to bring it up. This is where you say, you know, Rob is someone who empowers women, and I feel like I should be able to support him. Can you just talk about, you know, where you're coming from with that line of logic?
Yeah, so, you know, I sat there thinking, I'm trying to build an advocacy program alongside Steffi and Letitia for women empowerment using the game of Survivor. That's not what it's about. That's never what it's about. And I am fundamentally at my core an equalist. I am not a feminist at all costs. I have a son. I have two brothers. So I know the good and the bad and the ugly sides of woman empowerment. And I'm very, very, very passionate about it. And I'm a vocal advocate for women's rights, but not at the expense of guys. not especially. Not the ones that have carried you so far. And Rob is a good example, because yes, he was playing the game. Yes, at the end, he knew that I would be a perfect person to sit next to in front of that jury. So that is a reason that he kept me to the end. But I would never have gotten as far as I did, and vice versa, if we hadn't been each other's mirror and we hadn't literally played a parallel game. And that had nothing to do with gender. That had to do with fundamental trust and an alliance in a game of Survivor, not woman empowerment with two people that you haven't really trusted the whole game through, just because it'll sound good and be a good advocacy program in the end.
So on that note, you know, again, that you know, I'm not a puppet, I'm a co-conspirator thing is really interesting, because I mean, the edit showed a lot of, you know, the stuff that Rob was doing, and I would argue that maybe we didn't necessarily see you two as partners until the very end when people brought it up. Do you have a reaction to, I guess, the way that your and Rob's dynamic was portrayed on the show looking back?
So that was the secret to our success, is that nobody really knew. And we deliberately kept our association very quiet. So on Ta'alo, we would hardly go and speak quietly together, go for a walk on the beach together. It was a very, yeah, and especially coming back to Manamalo, it was, we'll have our conversations. We know it's safe. We know it's a place of complete honesty and trust, which is very hard to say out loud when talking about the game of Survivor. But yeah, that was the hidden benefit of our, or what made it so strong and so powerful, is that people underestimated it. Darrow thought that he was Mike's number one. Rob's number one. Mike thought that he was Rob's number one. I mean, now you're sitting there thinking, And Nicole, 40 Years Robs, number one. But genuinely, yeah, I had a few other people who also thought that they were my number one. Jeffrey, Mike, maybe at a stage, Kurbis. They all thought that they were my ride or die. And yeah, we had each other's back from the beginning. And yeah, it was a good...
Yeah, I want to talk about the pomp and circumstance that came with that final five travel council. You have, you know, Rob about to put the necklace on Steffi, and then you give this speech about, you know, playing the idol under Rao, about how the idol belongs to courageous, secure men. It all culminates in Steffi going, you turn to her and you say, you betrayed the amigos. Talk to me about, you know, what exactly was the thinking behind all the dramatics that went on, especially when you send someone like Steffi, who is very emotionally vulnerable, out of the game like that?
Listen, we knew, we figured out towards the end exactly how devious she had been. And we are all devious in the game, but not to one another, not to the amigos. And when Steffi did that, I mean, not Steffi, Sipe did that, that was the end. And now Steffi was doing it. But I mean, planning an all-women's alliance, hiding the fact that she was at the Island of Secrets with Gina. So much was concealed and hidden. And we knew from the beginning that perhaps she couldn't be trusted. I think this was our, like, you see. We knew it from the beginning. She was never really part of the amigos. She's had all this other stuff going on, and we just felt indignant. And it made for great theatrics on the night. I suppose the way we did it was not very kind. But that's not what it's about, is it? That's never how it goes down. It's not a very gentle PC exit. Not really as that level of betrayal.
And I can imagine what you said before, where, like, actually pulling off that move would really make you feel like you were on cloud nine. Hence, you know, when you tell Letitia flat out, hey, you made this move against us, and that's why you're going to go now.
Yes, exactly. You feel a little bit invincible in the moment.
So, you know, just briefly about the final four round, because Letitia is going to take aim at you mainly, and she really is, for lack of a better term, kind of disgusted at the way that you're playing the game. She talks about how, you know, you're sort of like bastardizing honesty and integrity. What was your reaction in the moment to the way that she was, you know, kind of throwing your game under the bus right before the final tribal council?
Yeah, it was just patience, I guess. I was frustrated with her, but I understood. She had been caught with her hands in the cookie jar. Her whole plan had fallen apart, and she knew she was going home next. So she's going to be angry. She's going to act out. She's going to be desperate to try and get votes. She'll say anything. I mean, Rob and I had the conversation. She will literally say anything to Darrell, anything to me, anything to Rob, to try and get us to side with her now. And yes, I had no integrity with her, but I never promised her in my integrity.
I want to get into this final tribal council because, again, I will, just like on the podcast, I will commend you for coming in and delivering, I think, something unexpected in terms of a speech. And for what it's worth, I think it did earn you 4 jury votes, which is, you know, pretty awesome at the end of the day. To start out, you know, you do mention at one point that, hey, you know, I regret the moment I thought Survivor was an advocacy program. As you mentioned before, this is a game. Did that moment ever, you know, click for you? Was there a light bulb moment when you realized that that was the case?
I think that was on the beach before the Steffi blindside with Rob. That was when I knew what I had to do. I was like, what am I doing? This is not world peace. This is Survivor.
So your 3 rules of engagement: lock in, love hard, lie hard. Did you really walk in with those 3 rules, or was that something that you sort of came up with in anticipation for these types of questions at Final Tribal Council?
It was a good articulation of my game plan, because I think you have to sit on that beach and think hard about what you're going to say to these people that you've betrayed. And I had to describe what I've done. And that was the most accurate description that I could come up with is, yeah, lock in, love hard. I really, really loved hard. And I think that set me up for a lot of success and a lot of failure, because people trust you next level and don't realize that you are also lying hard, really hard.
Yeah, I do have a question here from Jonathan Lilia of ranking the importance of lock in, love hard, and lie hard. So I guess of those 3, which would you say was the most important and which was the least important in terms of your ultimate success in the game?
I don't think one can function without the other. Because had I been there, love the world, a real Mother Teresa, then I wouldn't have lasted very long either. And if I had only lied, I wouldn't have developed those personal relationships that got me so far. So, you know, I'm happy with my game plan. I'm proud of it. I fought so damn hard to get all the way to the end, and my game plan got me there. But it was a catch-22 because that same game plan put me in such a bad predicament with the jury at the end. So, yeah, it was either go do this amazing game plan that you have, which I didn't even really know was a proper tangible game plan. That was literally just winging it and doing the best I could, using authenticity and what I knew of the game, those sort of fundamental lines. And then getting myself into the situation where, yeah, you're damned if you are, you're damned if you don't.
So the jury statements, they're, suffice it to say, as you mentioned, I think, in your like little exit interview on the MNET website, little rough towards you in particular. You know, you had Jeff's statement, you had Kubis's question, which was essentially make me like you more. Obviously, Meryl's monologue, which I certainly have thoughts on. And then finishing off with Steffi's statement about essentially saying, you know, where do you draw the line, even though she does apologize later. Of those statements, did any surprise you in particular with how much they came after you?
I didn't. I suppose I was ready for all of them. I underestimated how emotional this jury was. And perhaps that's also an illustration of my personality or my character, that I have a heart, trust me, a bleeding heart, but I have a bit of a cutoff. Yeah, I don't quite know how to articulate that better for you. But I think Meryl was the hardest because it was so deeply personal. Come at me for my game plan, sure. Come at me for lying or pretending to have integrity, whatever you want to say about me. But I think, and it definitely struck a nerve, hey? Attack me as mom. That crossed a line because once you are in the island, hurting people, betraying people, lying on the beach, you know, those, you're in this extreme situation. And I suppose Ponderosa is an extreme situation of its own, so I do give her that. But to have the time away to reflect and remove yourself from the game and to come back to a final tribal with intense, you know, mom shaming, it was a lot. It was a lot. And I do respect her context completely. But yeah, that was the hardest one for me.
You did have Steffi come back and apologize in her jury statement. Did that help you at all? Because obviously, again, I can imagine how emotionally reeling you are, especially after a comment like Meryl's, but Steffi's on top of it. Did that sort of help your emotional arc at all when someone says, hey, I know I was hard on you and I do apologize about that?
It does indeed. And I had a lot of respect considering how fresh it was for Steffi. Also considering she went into Ponderosa being this villain herself to most of those people. So she had questions to answer on that side, and they didn't go easy, I'm sure. So she came in fresh, hurt, emotional, and she still managed to check herself. That was pretty cool. And then even vote for me. That for me was so significant. And when Nico asked me at the reunion show, he said to me, were you surprised by any of the votes? I actually couldn't see from where I was sitting. I didn't know who had written my name down at that point.
So you could have said all of them because you had no idea.
Yes, exactly. Because I didn't know who'd actually voted. And when I found out just a couple of minutes later in a break that Steffi had written my name down, I was floored, but not. Because she is one of those players that I respect. She's a game player with that just enough logic in her to remember that it's a game.
I want to talk about your response to those, because you do end up getting four votes, like you said, Steffi, Jacques, Kubis, and Sipe. Some really interesting comments as well from those voting confessionals. You know, Kubis, in true Kubis fashion, saying the bitch inside me likes you. You have Jacques. Talking about how, you know, you played the game clinically well into perfection. Steffi saying you know, you had reasons behind what you did. Sipe, I thought, was really interesting, saying that you had taken too many bruises for Rob. So what was your reaction to finding out not only those votes, but the reasoning behind them?
I was impressed with Sipe's level of intuition, I suppose, because she had really watched, and you could see her at every tribal. She would sit there and very carefully watch and observe without her own personal hurt causing snide eye rolls. So I did respect her position on the jury. Mm-hmm. And she saw it. She saw the fact that I was the web and Rob was the spider. And yeah, I took those knocks because it was part of my original game plan to stay true to that alliance, and it served me really, really well, but it also got me into some really hairy situations.
So when you walked out of that final tribal council, I know you said it was, again, a little brutal, but did you expect, I guess I should expect, what were your chances you thought of actually taking it at the end of the day above someone like Rob?
So I really wanted it, and I really thought I had a chance. I thought I had a shot. If the jury was a logical jury, perhaps I could swing it on the knife to make them realize that I had played just as hard and smart as Rob, but in a very different way, and possibly even played harder. But I also was very cognizant of the fact that Rob, yeah, to the most point, he never cracked. You must remember that. At every point, somebody broke along the way, and that's why they went home. Rob never cracked. He had this peace and this calm the whole way through, and it attracted everybody like fireflies to a light. Mm. Or it caused the opposite reaction, but in very few. And yeah, he definitely outplayed all of us and deserves that win wholeheartedly. And I know this sounds, again, this is hashtag world peace, PC, Mother Teresa, but genuine. I wanted to go to the end having this solid trust bond with people that I respected, and that we are this band of brothers and sisters, and we've got each other's back. And then whatever happens at the end happens, because at least we've survived till the final. And that was my belief from the beginning. It's my belief at the end. I'm super satisfied with that. But of course I wanted to win. Of course.
On that note, you know, you did a lot of great stuff. You might have some unfinished business in not winning. If you get that offer to play Survivor again, would you go do it? And would you change anything specifically if you would?
Is that a trick question? Like in a heartbeat? yes.
You never know, because I know that, you know, some people certainly perceive the way they've been received, or the way the television product goes, and sometimes they take a few steps away. But I'm happy to hear that you are ready to commit to the island of hell, no matter what the cost.
Yeah. You know what? I respect the game and the legacy of Survivor so much. It is epicness. Yes, it was really hard, but all of that is a gift. Nico says to you, when you leave the island, you leave with a gift. It's very ethereal at the time. He says it in that Nico voice. Sounds like God. But he's right. You leave there with this, wow, you know, like, that is me. My full potential and my full darkness. And it's connected. You can't label things as good and bad anymore. They're just parts of who you are and the human experience. And if every human being on earth could have an experience like that kind of awakening, I would wish it for them. Yes, absolutely. So if I got a chance to go back, yes, I would go. Would I play a little bit differently? Of course, because the game plan would adapt according to the players in the game. And it would be a nice challenge to be able to see what a whole new set of environment and circumstances and people would do.
One last question I want to ask, because your game and your portrayal, suffice it to say, certainly polarizing across the fan community. And I do want to give you kudos that no matter what, I think you just hosted like a masterclass in terms of handling trolls and people that, you know, were coming after you on social media. I mean, at the end of the day, did that impact you at all, the way you viewed the show or the way you viewed yourself? How are you able to let that slide off your back like hail?
Initially, I wept, like, especially after Nathan, because I cared about him, and people came at me very hard for that. But that was the healthiest part of the journey. And that's when I talk about self-awareness. It's like, get over yourself. Don't be so precious with your reputation. You know your truth. You know what you stand for. And if people aren't saying bad stuff about you, you're not relevant. So I really have no issue with it. And I know this sounds really hectic, maybe slightly psychopathic, but having people talk the smack about you all the time, it opens up necessary conversations. And in South Africa right now, I mean, the timing couldn't have been more prominent and potentially disastrous for me personally, because the All Women Alliance blindside came out in the same week that we had a massive uproar against men in South Africa because of the treatment and abuse and violence against women. And it sparked some very necessary conversations and was pleasantly surprised by the amount of support for equality and for men standing up and being part of the solution. So I'm okay with people using, they can say what they want as long as it starts necessary conversations. Maybe some thought-provoking dinner time conversation.
Well, Nicole, I wanted to thank you immensely for taking the time to talk with me. I know you were, you know, wrangling a child and a cat while you were talking. I know you're on your way to take an intercontinental vacation. So obviously you lead a busy life, but as someone who I immensely enjoyed over the course of the season, it was great to finally get to sit down and talk with you about all your thoughts over the course of the game. And I'm sure we'll be able to talk soon about more Survivor stuff once the time calls for it.
Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. It's felt like therapy. I feel a little bit more healed and really love you guys. I'm such a fan of you.
Well, this time will be a pro bono. I won't charge you for this time around, but maybe next time I'm going to have to. My rates don't go for very high, though. Just a carafe of wine.
Oh, no, I'm quite possessive over my carafes. Sorry. We'll renegotiate.
If anybody wants to keep up with all the stuff that you're doing, what would you like to plug for people to check out, especially in the off season while Survivor South Africa is off the air?
Oh, man, I really appreciate that. Underscore Nicole Kappa on Instagram at underscore Nicole Kappa. You can follow my whole journey there. I'm off to climb a mountain in the Alps now, the highest peak in the Alps, for Rare Disease of South Africa. So that's part of one of my passions, mountain climbing. There's a link in bio to everything that I do there. And yeah, stay in touch, see what's next, new adventures.
Absolutely. Well, Nicole, best of luck in your new adventures. Thank you so much again for taking the time to speak with us. And yeah, enjoy your trip and enjoy what's to come for you. I'm sure it's going to be nothing but bright things for you. So that's going to do it for this deep dive, but we have many, many more to come as we make our way through the Island of Secrets cast. The next deep dive we've got on the schedule should be Jacques, and myself and Shannon Gates should be talking with Jacques. Big fan of the show, and I can only imagine the insight he's going to give about everything that happened out there during the season, and much, much more to come as well. So please make sure you're subscribed to either the International Survivor feed or Reality TV for wrap-ups, and let us know your thoughts as the deep dives progress as well. Thank you so much, Escan St. Pierre, for editing this behind the scenes. Thank you all so much for listening. Let's go with hashtag Island of Hell if you made it to the end of this deep dive in honor of Nicole's poor, unfortunate time in Old Ta'alo, half-hearted digging and all. Again, thank you so much for listening. Thanks to the great Nicole Kapper for her insight. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.